Welcome to Reawakening Love and Power with Carol Ann and my conversation with the Wild Witch Sequoia Glastonbury on honoring the menstrual cycle and blood magic. We recorded this a couple of days before the summer solstice in Sequoia's kitchen. So you can picture us looking out the windows to the trees under the air conditioning. You might hear the air conditioning a little in the background, but I think you'll understand that we needed to keep it on because it was very hot. And you can also picture four cats and two dogs lying around in various positions, enjoying the cooler air with us. We are both cisgendered women with active menstrual cycles, and we both live with male partners. So our take and our lens on this topic is informed by those identities as well as our own life experiences. Not everyone who identifies as a woman menstruates, and not everyone who menstruates is a woman. Take what resonates with you from this conversation and leave the rest. Sequoia is a mother, a witch, a shamanic craftswoman, a doula, and a hearthkeeper. She is the founder of The Wild Witch, supporting women to claim their inner witch and live a wild and wonderful life. She offers in-person workshops, online courses, and one-on-one support. A teacher with the School of Shamanic Womancraft, she brings her presence and skills to witnessing and supporting transformation, creating safe spaces, and supporting women to find their inner knowing and reclaim their power. She holds workshops in her community, at conferences and festivals, on blood magic, reclaiming our wild selves, honoring women and menstruation, drum making, and seasonal sabbats. She's co-created and held red tents and women's spaces around Australia. She lives in the forest on Bundjalung country in the Byron hinterland with her family and animal companions, connecting daily with the earth and all the wild creatures she shares her bush home with. Sequoia holds the vision of the healed sisterhood and is dedicated to living in service to the goddess. So Sequoia, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for having this conversation with me today.
Thanks so much for inviting me to come and sit and talk to you for a while.
And I thought I'd start by asking the Wild Witch, what does it mean to her to be a witch?
Ah, big question. So I can just speak from my personal feelings, you know, my own personal experience. And for me, being a witch, identifying myself that way, embodying that in me, is really about embodying and being that version of myself that is the rebellious woman, the wild woman. You know, the woman who is in her power. And there's a long line of, you know, witches and healers and really strong and powerful women in my line, both on my mother's side and my father's side. And to me, you know, really embodying that kind of medicine woman, the healer, woman who knows how to get things done. Mm. And another, you know, big aspect of witchcraft, obviously, which I really feel strongly about and call strongly into my life, is this working with magic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, working with the energy, connecting with the earth. You know, I almost want to say worshipping the earth, but it's not even a worship. It's just like, you know, we are the earth. So it's just our very existence. So it's a big question.
Yeah. Like a communion.
Like a communion. Like the way that I experience witchcraft in my life or being a witch is very much earth-centered. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way it necessarily is for everybody. Everyone has their own, you know, feeling of what that is for them. But for me, so much of it is around, you know, being with the earth, being in tune with her cycles, being in tune with my own cycles and how that connects to her. You know, I say her because that feels, you know, right for me. And again, you know, it's such a personal thing of how we feel this relationship that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think too, I asked this question because, as I was saying before, I watched Hocus Pocus recently and I got all excited. I was like, ooh, a movie about witches. And I was so disappointed at the portrayal. And then I realized the kind of concept that I have now of what it means to be a witch is so different than what you would see in movies or kind of the
modern cultural representation where witches are evil and they want to eat children, and they're like, you know.
Yeah, there's so much of that kind of, you know, pop culture or, you know, cultural sort of stories behind, like, the, you know, the Wicked Witch of the West or the Big Bad Witch, and, you know, she's got a green face and she's got like a wart on her nose, and, you know, like, it's such a picture that we have. And so then it's no surprise that women are, you know, potentially scared to embrace that label, or, you know, feel like repulsed by it, or kind of go, oh, I don't want anything to do with that, you know, witchy business, because, you know, we've just been conditioned to think that it's something evil, or, you know, something, you know, awful or bad. And really, like, in the world that we live in, like, whenever something's been, you know, called evil and bad and has to do with women, it's probably because actually it's where we find our biggest power. Yeah. It's this way to just, you know, suppress our power. So, although I do have to admit, with the, you know, the warts on your nose and the green, I mean, I've got a couple of chin hairs, so my children want me to pluck them, but I won't, because I just figure they're my little witch hairs and they're there to stay. So maybe some of the stereotype is real.
Maybe the warts are allowed.
Warts are allowed. Warts and all.
Well, that's, I mean, that actually ties in perfectly to the topic of menstruation, because that is something that is kind of culturally been labeled as dirty or shameful, or like something that you have to keep hidden, or, you know, don't bleed on your clothes, or that sort of thing. And also, even just like being accepting of the little hairs on your chin, it also reminds me of just this way of going, this is my body. There's actually nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
Because it's my body.
It's my body. And it's perfect, exactly the way it is. Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's such a huge taboo around menstruation, although that is changing. Mm. So I'm 44. So I, you know, started menstruating when I was like 13, 14, around that age. And that kind of generation of women who started bleeding around that age, like, the stories that come from that are mostly that I've heard in the circles that I've done, which is hearing a lot of women's stories, pretty negative, or if not negative, then just kind of nothing, you know, sort of like, oh yeah, I just got given my pads. Yeah. Yep. No one wanted to talk about it. No one told me any information. I didn't know it was happening. And this kind of, you know, cultural sort of taboo around it, you know, like blue liquid on a pad, and, you know, these like bizarre Tampax ads where they're like, ride a horse when you're like, it was so, such a bizarre kind of cultural picture to have when I was growing up. And what I really loved is holding, you know, circles that I do where we talk about this stuff and seeing the younger women, so the women who are in their 20s now, who were bleeding, you know, started bleeding not that long ago, really, have a very different story. Mm. And they're not coming with that kind of, we can't talk about it, that shame, that real sort of like, I mean, some of them do, but the bigger picture is kind of like, yeah, my mum brought me flowers, or I had this really lovely time, and this early sort of love and connection and joy around it, which is so cool. And like, that's pretty quick generational change. It's not that's not a big change, you know, not a lot of time in between. So that gives me lots of hope for my daughter and for her friends. And
it's good to find areas in society where things are going in a good direction.
It's so good. And I mean, you can even see it in, you know, just in pop culture, like ads about periods, or like, we actually say the word blood. You know, there's videos where people are, you know, bleeding, loads of information, even in like, you know, the most mainstream media, like kind of talking about, you know, women menstruating and taking time off work, or, you know, using natural products rather than, you know, just tampons or whatever. Like, it's definitely changing, and there's still heaps to do.
Yeah,
because we've still got all these women who are, you know, my age and like myself, who are still carrying all that old shame and taboo, you know, so it's actually on us to make sure that we're not passing that on now. You know, and even if we're not actively thinking that, it's still, until you do the work, it's still in there, and you're still passing it on even unconsciously. So it's kind of like on all of us to be doing that dismantling of that work.
Yeah, and if you kind of want to get a read on where you're at personally around that, you can think about, look at, how do you feel about your own blood? How do you treat that time, or see that time when you are bleeding, if you are bleeding? If there's any kind of like bodily reactions that come up around that, is there tension? Is there softness? Is it okay to be gentle and make space around that time? Is there pressure to like just get through it. It's the curse. It's like this time that's just horrible. I know that actually a lot of people do have really horrendous experiences of their bleeding times. So I don't mean to minimize that either, but it's interesting to see that. I'm 34, I think. And when I started bleeding, it was one of those kind of like, it wasn't a bad or dirty thing. It just wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
Just kind of a little bit like factual, like here are some pads. This is what you do.
Yeah.
And I don't remember much else about it. And I think I asked my mom, she doesn't remember much else about it either. But there's been, so I didn't have like, but then I had those, it's not just what happens in your family. It's what happens in your community,
absolutely,
and at school and that sort of thing.
What are all the different spheres of influence in mm-hmm. your life? You know, I know for me during my first blood, like it's not that my family was horrible. Like it was more just this kind of, okay, you're bleeding. And it was more my own internal feelings around that. Not any, what anyone did, you know, for me, it was like, there's four of us in my family, four kids. And when I started bleeding, we were in this little cabin, like our cottage, with one shared bathroom for like seven people and a shared room with my siblings. And I must've been like nearly 14 or already turned 14. And wanted privacy, you know, I wanted to have privacy, wanted to like have a shower, wanted to like, you know, just, and I didn't, and I couldn't because we were in a cabin with no proper bathroom and shared space, you know, and it was just like, oh, it felt so exposing, felt really embarrassing. I didn't want anyone to know. And it wasn't because of what anyone did to me. It was simply my own feelings and experience. And so then that became my imprint, you know, that being a woman is embarrassing, that, you know, being a woman is, you know, things need to be hidden, like, you know, and I wasn't even a conscious imprint, but as I've explored this and unraveled this in my life, it's become very apparent that that imprint has had a massive impact on how I do so many things in the world. And interestingly, the kind of the shame stuff that comes up around that was really happening that once we got back to school. You know, like the high school that I went to, it was like, you know, if anyone saw blood on your clothes, it was all over. You know, like that was like the worst possible thing that could ever happen, you know, and people would make fun of you and people were just horrible. And yeah, so that's the culture, you know, that was the culture that my teenagehood was steeped in. So it's just that kind of like all of those things are impacting onto my experience of my first time that I bled in those early years, you know, before I had a really big experience which changed all of that. So yeah, that was pretty impactful as well.
Yeah, you had a big experience that changed your experience of how you relate to your cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. So I, in those early years, like I mentioned, the shame and the kind of like horribleness, I also had really bad cramps. So, you know, my mom used to let me stay home and I would try to take painkillers and just stay in bed, and they were you know, pretty horrific, like pretty intensely horrific, heavy blood, lots of pain. And when I, you know, went to uni, so after I moved out of home, I was in this, you know, I didn't want to make garbage. I was really into like environmentalism and, you know, all that stuff. And I was like, I don't want to be throwing out tampons, and, you know, tampons are made with rayon fibers and like they're really bad for you. And I was like, there's got to be something else. But I didn't like wearing pads. So I found a menstrual cup. So I found it, you know, like I was like 19 or something when this happened.
It's like before cups really became
big. It was like in a random health food store in Canada, like on the bottom shelf. And I just happened to come across it and I was like, what is this? And it was the Keeper. It was like really hard rubber. And it was, so they're so much better now than they were. But yeah, so I got it because I thought, cool, no garbage, awesome. And I didn't want to wear pads because I didn't like them because I'd bleed a lot. And so I bought this, and when I took it out the first time, you know, I mean, the first time was the inevitable, like, blood all over the bathroom, you know, like, just a mess. But once I had the hang of it, and it's like, oh, hang on, I've got this cup full of blood, and I've never actually touched it or really seen it before. Because, you know, when you use a tampon, you just take it out, you throw it in the bin. It's like, it's a non-thing. And so it was like this, ah, there it is. And I remember, like, I touched it, and I was like, like it's blood. It's actually, you know, imagine that. It's just blood. And that really changed a lot for me. Like it really started shifting how I felt about my blood, which then in turn, how do I feel about my body? How do I feel about, you know, how connected are you with, you know, with your vulva, with your vagina? Because when you've got to put a cup in, you're touching yourself, your hands are up inside yourself. Like, you know, if you're not, if that's weird, you know, then the cup's going to be weird. And it's like, even using tampons, it's not the same level of intimacy with your own body. And so it really changed a lot of things for me. And at a, you know, at a pivotal age as well, you know, before I even turned 20. And so what I noticed once that happened and I had that experience of going, wow, like it's blood. It's like, well, you got to do something with it now. You can't just throw it in the bin like you do a tampon. So it was like, well, what do you do with a cup of blood? So then I started putting it out on the earth.
Yeah.
So that becomes the inevitable, you know, process of connection with her.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then what I found in my life was simply just that my life path started changing. So the trajectory that I was on, which was go to school, get a degree, do whatever is coming next after that, kind of pivoted to go traveling, go and find yourself, and go and see what else is out there in the world. And I'm not saying that, like, as soon as you get a menstrual cup and start touching your blood, you're going to, like, change the whole trajectory of your life, but you might. Because magic, you don't actually know exactly how it works. So you never know what's going to happen.
I have some similar elements in my own life, maybe in a different order. But I definitely went through that phase of, I was on that trajectory with the, you know, the job. And then I got married and all of the, you know, go to university, get the job, get married, save for a house, all that sort of thing. And then I would say, at that time I wasn't really bleeding regularly because I was on hormonal contraception, but the process of kind of coming home into my body more, feeling my body, listening to my body, like inhabiting my body, occupying my body, was the thing that changed the course of my life.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to me that, like you say, that the things that we're kind of taught or conditioned not to pay attention to or not to engage with so much, when you do, it can change your life in kind of, I don't know about countercultural might not be the right word, but just, you know, not, your life might look a bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. And even, you know, I even found that on a physical level, things started changing once I sort of started this process of collecting my blood, you know, using the cup, taking it out onto the earth. It's like my cramps started going away.
Yeah.
Still had them, but it was lessened, you know, and the kind of the need to sort of take painkillers was lessened. And that just kind of improved as the years have gone on. And it was kind of, you know, after I had my first child, and that was the next whole big shift of how that experience with my womb. And then, you know, I've never had painkillers since for blood. But yeah, it's a huge awesome process.
I think there's a lot to be said for the relationship that you have with your body, the way you relate to your body and think about it and feel about it. It actually does have real consequences for what you experience in your body.
Yeah.
So I had a similar thing to that. I used to, when I was in school, I used to get cramps so bad that if I didn't take the right painkiller right at the start, I would have to go home from school. Or a couple of times I even like got sick from it, like threw up because the pain was that intense. But then there was, I can't attribute this exactly, because I was on hormonal contraception for a while, so that changed things. But when I came off it, I was shocked to realize that I had actual painless periods. And in that time, that's when I had done a lot more with my sexuality and kind of inhabiting my pelvis, getting to know my vulva and my vagina and my womb, and learning to kind of embrace and inhabit my body in a way that was much more like being with it rather than fighting it and trying to make it do things it didn't want to do.
And I often wonder, like, you know, when I think about those early years, you know, how many girls, if they were allowed to just have days off or not go to school or not go to work or whatever, would not experience the pain they would. Like, how much of the pain that we experience from our, you know, menstruation is this anticipation that we have to be out in the world, you know, because, you know, what what's actually happening is this call to go inward. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like you go into the cave. We're going into the quiet space, into the time of retreat. You know, it all connects to the, you know, to the wheel and the seasons and the cycles of life. And so we're kind of in our bodies is calling us in, you know, to kind of be still and be quiet and be like, be with the magic that is stillness and quiet, you know, and the rest of it, the world is saying, you got to be out all the time. And it's like, you're being completely against your body to then be, I have to go to work, I have to go to school, I have to, you know, do whatever it is that I have to do now. And how much of our sort of, you know, pain experience that we have would be lessened or non-existent if we could heed that call of rest, retreat, quiet time, looking after ourselves, you know, when we're bleeding. And I know lots of women are doing that, but, you know, there's heaps more who, you know, who aren't and aren't able to. Well, what an amazing cultural shift that would be if we were just like, right, you can just have 3 days off every time. Go and do your retreat. It's important.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually important to kind of have that time.
What are some ways that you think women or anyone else with the period who has that experience, how can they honor that, even if maybe they have work obligations or they have little kids or something and they can't always structure their life completely around it? What are some ways to honor that bleeding time and get kind of a, at least an element of that inward focus?
And I think it's really important to kind of to realize that in the modern world that we live, like, it might look really different. It's not necessarily going to look like, you know, I literally retreat into a separate, beautiful, cushioned room for 3 days with hot water bottles on tap and tea and sleep. You know, it might look like having a bath after dinner by yourself. No one else is allowed in the room. Or having, you know, a special hot water bottle that you take to bed with you and just nurturing yourself and going to bed early and reading, if that's what you like to do, or listening to music, or, you know, just carving out those little pieces of time where you're saying, I'm doing this because I'm bleeding and I'm taking the time. You know, it's that change. It's not just, I'm going to have a bath because I'm going to have a bath before I go to bed and clean myself. It's like, I'm going to have a bath because I'm going to relax and honor my bleeding time, you know, like just starting to make those little tiny changes and whatever they can be. You know, when I teach this stuff in when we have workshops and circles around it, some of the ideas that women have come up with are amazing. So I remember one woman told this story where she would bake a cake at the beginning, and every day she'd have like a slice of this cake and a glass of red wine, and no one else was allowed to eat the cake, just her. And I was like, and so every day that she would bleed, she'd have like this cake, and I was like, that's amazing, and that's like, that's the primo way to mark out your red tent at home. It's cake and wine. I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, lots, like, some people want to put blood on their face just to kind of give them that reminder that, yes, I'm bleeding, or wear like an amulet or something, you know, that marks that they're in that time. Or, you know, some people can structure their work that maybe they just do less outwardly things. Take a nap if you can. You know, I think it's just about recognizing within yourself that it's happening and not being like, whatever, I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to drug it out and not think about it, or not have it at all. Even if it's just an acknowledgement of like, I'm bleeding. And so, no, I'm not going to do that after work stuff today. I'm actually just going to go home and rest. Whereas any other day you might be like, yeah, cool, let's go do post-work drinks or whatever it is, you know, however your life is. That you just, whatever it feels like honoring to yourself to do that, because really, that's what's being called for. You know, what's being called for is just having this time to really honor yourself and honor what your body's doing, which is actually a miracle.
So I hear that theme of bringing that real intention of honoring and sacredness. And one of the things that comes to my mind, I was talking to a client the other day about boundaries, and the thing is that when you're kind of in the lifelong habit of overriding your boundaries or overriding what your body is telling you, it can actually be super uncomfortable to see what it is that you're overriding and the pain and discomfort of that. But sometimes it is that act of, even if there's still things that I have to do while I'm bleeding that I really wish that I didn't have to, if I can allow myself to feel the discomfort of that, to feel how this is really not what my body wants right now, but it is what we have to do, and just be okay with that, that discomfort and that misalignment, then you can still maintain that connection to what your body is telling you over time. Because if it gets too uncomfortable to feel, when we override, does that make sense?
Yeah, I actually think that's a really perfect thing that you said, that we don't like feeling discomfort. No, like, we don't like feeling bad. We don't like having pain. We don't like feeling yucky. And our whole culture is like, you don't have to. You know, just feel awesome all the time. Like, take these painkillers, you know, and then you won't feel pain. Or take these antidepressants and then you won't feel sad. And take, you know, and like, whatever. Everyone's, you know, going to be on their own path with this stuff. But as a culture, like, as a bigger picture of it, it's like, we don't have to feel anything. We can just feel awesome all the time. We can feel up, high, wonderful,
or just kind of numb.
Or numb, yeah. And, you know, like, there's a whole spectrum of feelings. And if we, you know, kind of like think about the wisdom of the cycles and how the earth moves through the cycles and then how we move through the cycles, like, there's a season for everything. You know, like, there's a season where we are, like, you know, like right now we're in summer, we're in this height of energy and excitement and the peak of the year, and then we're gonna go down and we're gonna go to winter where it's quiet and still and, you know, dark and not the same kind of energy, like the complete opposite. And we sort of have this world where it's just like, we don't really do that very well.
Yeah.
We don't do that side of it very well. We don't do discomfort very well. And if we can just, even if it's discomfort, just to feel it and name it for what it is. Yeah. Like, I'm bleeding today and I have to go to work and it actually feels awful, but I have to, so I'm here.
Yeah.
And it's okay to feel that, and it's okay to share that with others, you know? And and maybe that will help them, you know? If you could be in a place where you would say, you know, actually, I don't want to go out for drinks after work today because I feel pretty tired and I'm cramping because I'm bleeding and I'm going to go home. Like, imagine the permission that would give others to say, whoa, you can do that. You can actually say no. You can go home. You can rest. You can retreat. Yeah. You can, you know, whatever that is. And yeah, it's powerful when we speak this stuff out loud, which is, you know, part of the reason that I do what I do, because I, you know, have spent so much of my life feeling like couldn't speak stuff, or you know, this imprint of mine of, you know, being embarrassed or feeling shamed about it, or, you know, wanting to hide this stuff, that the medicine for me is to, you know, speak it loud and proud, which is not the one for everyone. But even if we can do it just a little bit, you know, just imagine who you might you know, give that little piece of magic to, that it's okay to feel bad about it, or it's okay to want to go to bed or early or whatever it is.
The more I've definitely seen that in my relationship with my partner and my relationship with my friends, the more that I'm just open about this is where I'm at, the more it does give other people permission.
And for me, a big piece of it is my children. So really never wanting them to have an imprint like that, even though I see, you know, I see in my daughter, she's 11, and I can see the cultural imprint of things with her, even growing up in a household that it is super open and we talk about it all the time, and, you know, that it still exists, you know, that cultural imprint of like, ew, it's a bit, you know, or I don't want to talk about that or whatever is still there. But it's felt really important to me that that it's always been an open space where we can talk about things. And even, you know, it's not just about my daughter, like, it's about my son as well. Like, you know, he's got friends who are going to, you know, menstruate.
Yeah.
And I certainly wouldn't want him to be the kid who's like, ew, that's gross, you know, or, oh, you stink, like we got in high school. Like, you know, that would be like the worst.
Yeah.
So it's like, if we can kind of normalize this stuff and talk about it and take that shame and taboo away from it, it just becomes, you know, oh, you know, cool. Oh, you're menstruating today. Like, do you want me to get you something?
Yeah.
You know, and how to be of service to each other, especially in that time.
I think you're pointing to something really powerful too, which is that connection with other people is one of the things that can help dispel shame. That for it to be spoken and accepted by other people is one of the things that can start to melt some of the shame. And it can also start with connection, just connection with yourself and going, this is actually what's going on in my body. This is what I can feel. I'm going to work on feeling acceptance of that and that that's okay.
Yeah.
And that there's nothing wrong with that. And then the more you can find people who are safe enough to let yourself be vulnerable with them, let them see you that way, the more that it starts to go, actually, I think this is something to be shamed about. Because the emotion of shame is kind of biologically in us to keep us from doing things that are like harmful to society, right? Like if you were going to, I don't know, do something that would compromise the well-being of everybody, or if you were going to murder somebody, that's the kind of thing that shame has the function of going like, don't behave that way because that's not good for you or the collective.
Yeah.
But it gets kind of triggered in these areas of our lives where it actually doesn't belong.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's just important to remember too, like some of this that we're carrying inside of like us, this old shame or whatever these feelings are, like there's nothing wrong with us for having them. You know, it's just, it just is what it is, just what we're carrying. It's from our imprint or from what happened or from how we grew up, you know, it's just there. Mm. So it's important to not be like, oh, I'm the worst because I feel ashamed about my blood or whatever. Like, no, it's actually really normal.
Yeah.
And just do whatever's the next bit, whatever's calling you next with that, you know? And because I think we can get caught up in that.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
Mm.
It's definitely my pattern to go like, you know, I hear something and then straight to, I'm wrong because I'm not like that.
Yeah. Or like there's something wrong with us that we now need to be fixed. And it's just like, no one needs to be fixed.
No.
Like we're all actually awesome and we're all, you know, whole in that sense. You know, it's just where are we unraveling that we were conditioned with as we were growing up? And then, you know, what do we want to create for ourselves going forward? Because you don't have to keep doing the same thing.
Mm.
You know, like I used to take heaps of painkillers and think that bleeding sucked and, you know, wished it away and wished it, you know, it wouldn't have to happen to me, to, you know, loving my blood and, you know, working with it and keeping it and sharing information about it because I feel so passionately about how important that is. So it's like, we don't stay the same. You know, we can change that. That can shift and change.
Yeah. There's a lot of hope in that too, that things can change. And I know sometimes for people it can feel like things can feel really stuck or like impossible to change, but it is just that, what's one little thing? Maybe you, when you're changing your tampon or your pad, or if you have a menstrual cup, just take that one moment longer to look at your blood before putting it out of sight or getting rid of it or whatever. And, even if in that moment when you're looking at it, there's this like disgust that comes up in your body, like, ugh. Just notice the disgust.
Yeah.
That's fine. Disgust is here. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good information.
And there's this really beautiful process that we can do if, so let's just go with what you just said. So disgust is arising. And maybe you're like, whoa, that's old. Like, where is that even from? No. You're like, I'm still carrying that disgust. Why? I don't actually feel that intellectually. If I think about it, I'm not disgusted by this, but that's what's arising. That's that deep kind of stuff that lives within us. So we have this beautiful opportunity and ability to let that go. So our blood, you know, our wombs are constantly doing a process of letting go. So it's the building of the lining, the peak of the cycle when, you know, when we ovulate, and then a letting go process, which is what menstruation is. And so if we can take that blood and we can do an awesome ritual with it, which is, you know, giving it back to the earth, then we can actually do the blood prayers with that, which is, what are you letting go of? So, all right, well, here comes disgust. I'm letting go of my disgust. And you might need to do that for who knows how many cycles. How deep does that disgust live, you know? And what is that disgust really about, you know? Is it about your blood? Is it about your body? Is it about something that happened to you around the time that you started bleeding? Like, where is that coming from? So that's the unraveling that can happen. And just this act of like giving that to the earth, it's like this transmutation process, you know? It's like, you're giving her disgust, but you know what? It's not going to stay that way, because it's like the whole earth just, it takes it, it takes all the things that are waste. It takes our wee, it takes our poo, it takes our blood, it takes, you know, all goes into the earth and then transmutes it.
Yeah.
Now that's actually what's happening. And so we just have this opportunity to do that every cycle for whatever it is that's arising for us. And, you know, you can do it if you still use disposable pads or tampons. Like, you know, people are wherever they're at with what they have to use, you know, like there's no judgment on that. And, you know, if you got a tampon, just plunk it into a cup of water and get the blood out, you know, and then the tampon goes in the bin and you've got this bloody water. So you can, if you use cloth pads, you soak them. If you have a cup, you know, you can pour it directly or you can mix it with water. You know, so you can get your blood out, whatever you're using. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, there's a whole nother thing about pads and tampons, which I don't know if we're going to get into here, but there's, you know, choices that are healthier to your body, and that's not necessarily reusable ones, but even just kind of organic cotton and things like that. So we're thinking about, you know, this is inside your body, you know, or up against your vulva for however many days, could be seven, every month. And how old are you? How long have you been menstruating for? Add up the days. Do you want bleach, you know, in your vagina? I don't. No, that's not something, you know. So those are the kinds of things to think about that maybe, you know, you haven't thought about before, which, you know, just to start considering how is it that we want to be. And if we're really honoring our bodies, what are we putting inside our bodies? And not just food-wise, like, you know, internalizing, you know, in there. So, yeah, lots to kind of consider when we're thinking about that stuff.
There's a whole world. But also, I'm thinking about if this is something that's newer to you, it might seem like there's so much. But if you just practice bringing that honoring intention, over time, the rest of it will come. Because you start to think about what does it actually look like to, you know, you start to think a bit deeper about the products that you're putting in contact with your body in those sensitive porous membranes. There are actually some medications that you insert vaginally, right? It is actually, it is like,
absolutely,
it is a part of your body that can absorb and take things in. But just if you start with that intention, then it can unfold from there.
Absolutely.
That's the one thread to follow.
Yeah.
Wherever that thread takes you.
Yeah, honoring yourself. Totally.
So how can we talk about this in terms of how it relates to relationships as well? Because I know when I started, when I got my IUD out and I started bleeding again a few years ago, and I was excited. I got researched cups. I did this an online quiz. I think it's called Put a Cup in It.
Something like that.
And it'll like recommend different brands or different sizes for you depending on. And I got my cup and it's pink. It's like a bright pink. And I started collecting my blood and looking. Oh, wow, that's what it looks like. It's, and it looks different when it's in a cup versus in a pad or on a tampon or something. And I started doing what you call your blood prayers, offering it to the plants and that sort of thing. And my partner, I would try to do it when he wasn't looking. And one time I remember doing it, I was like sneaking outside with my little like jar with my diluted blood in it. And he's like, he like taps on the glass like, what are you doing? And he's this like look of disgust on his face. And I was just like, ah. And but now, he'll, you know, he'll see me going out there and he'll be like, oh, you put that on the mint plant. It needs it more.
That's the beautiful ripple effect, you know? Like, so what you do, it's like, like that'll bring up his own, like, what are you doing? And then suddenly it's like, oh, wait, this is an honoring practice. This is beautiful. This is good for the plants, actually. It's just that ripples out. It's so beautiful.
But it's hard at first. I think this is maybe the same when you are getting deeper into practices of listening to your body or anything in terms of like what we were talking about with magic and what it means to be a witch or with doing your blood prayers, it's something that's maybe not mainstream or not mainstream in the community where you live or the culture that you were raised in. There's that initial phase that can be, it's like a little tiny sprout that can be so easily extinguished.
Yeah.
it's a really like vulnerable time when you're not fully, you're not fully trusting in it, or you haven't fully developed it, and it feels really easy to kind of second guess yourself. You're like, is this crazy? Am I making this up? Is this actually really disgusting and I'm being really weird? How would you talk to people who are in that phase of like just maybe starting to build the trust or belief in that what they're doing is actually true and sacred? Mm. Especially when like your closest ones might not be on the same page as you yet.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because what arises for me when you say that, when you said like my closest ones may not be, I would be like, well, get some different close ones. But in all seriousness,
it depends on the situation, right?
True.
Maybe that is a sign that some of the people in your life are not the right fit for you anymore.
Mm.
But I also believe in giving people a chance to come around.
Yeah, no, totally. Because I would, you know, it's... Yeah, you can't just cut people out of your life because they think your blood's weird. You gotta give them a chance. But it's in that trusting yourself, you know, it's a big process to trust yourself. You know, it's a journey. Because I don't think it just happens overnight. I think there's like a whole, you know, thing that happens, and it's little by little, you know? Like maybe the first time you collect your blood, you might think, like, I'm a fucking lunatic. What am I doing?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why am I doing this? And you pour it out on the earth and you think, okay, cool. And then maybe the next month you do it again because you just made a commitment to yourself that you're going to do it for 6 months or something, you know, to give it a try. And, you know, maybe it's just, it starts to, you notice, oh, hang on. I'm just noticing that I'm not feeling so bad, or I'm actually really enjoying honoring this evening time to myself once a month, or whatever it is, you know.
I'm starting to look forward to it, or now it starts to feel weird to pour that down the toilet.
Exactly, yeah. Or even just like I understand that the reason I felt, you know, negative about it was because when I, you know, first started bleeding, my mum just said, yeah, here's your pad, see you later. And actually no one said, oh, that's awesome.
Mm.
No, so maybe that's it, you know, and starting to just kind of understand this stuff. And the thing with, you know, the thing that I always try and remind people is that like magic's real, but you got to believe it.
Yeah.
You know, so if you start doubting it, like just remind yourself, no, it is real. Like,
yeah.
No, when you poured that blood out on the earth and like something happened in the moment, like that's real, you know, and it was for you, or you saw a sign like, yes, it is for you. That is that bit of magic that's coming back for you.
Yeah. If you experience something that's beneficial or supportive to your life, that's enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. It's awesome,
yeah,
actually.
Enough. Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
It's funny when you say, like, with your partner, you know, that kind of thing. Because, like, with my partner, I've been together for, like, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was already doing this stuff when I met him.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, like... It didn't shift and change when I was already there.
Yeah.
But it's funny sometimes to notice the normal things that happen in my house that probably maybe don't happen in other people's houses.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I remember one time my son was like, Mom, can you get your menstrual cup out of the bathroom sink because my friends are coming over?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry. You know, like, I don't even realize that I've left it there. And you know, just this kind of, you know, or the kind of like, oh, you know, you've got this bucket of blood here. What are you doing with it?
Yeah.
Or my personal favorite, which right now is there's actually like several jars of blood in the fridge that I'm saving up to do. I'm doing like a special thing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been saving it. And so they'll go into the freezer and be like, is this past? Oh God, it's mom's blood. And you know, like that's so normal in my house. But sometimes when I think like, when I tell these stories, people are probably like, what kind of crazy house do you live in?
Yeah.
But it's like they're used to it because that's how it's always been. But it's just kind of funny how those are sort of the experiences when, you know, it is very open and that kind of thing is normal, but you know, those things still come up. They still get a bit horrified when they think it's, you know, salad dressing and it's actually menstrual blood or whatever when they open the jar.
Maybe you need a labeling system.
I need a label machine.
I get
mom's blood.
I just get in trouble for not labeling my spices because I know what they all are. And my partner made a chocolate the other day and he thought that he was grabbing matcha powder, but it was powdered stevia.
Oh, no.
Just ruined the whole thing. But they do, yeah. It is the kinds of things that you can get used to anything, really. So why not get used to things that matter and make a difference in your life?
Absolutely. And, you know, if maybe the way to kind of, if you have got like a partner or family members or whatever who are a bit resistant to it or like think you're a big weirdo or whatever, like maybe just, and you really want them to support you, you know, if you're just like, I'm so into this and I want them to support me and they're thinking, I don't know about this, you know, what's a way that they could support you that isn't like, you know, maybe they're not going to be like, you know, carrying your blood out to the garden for you, but maybe it could be like, could you make me a cup of tea and a hot water bottle on these 3 nights a month? Thanks. And that might feel like, oh, yeah, I'd love to do that. That's so sweet. And it's not, you know, it's in a comfort zone, you know, like maybe that's where they need to be. And and that's where that you can receive that, you know, like maybe it's not going to be that, you know, like your partner might never like paint his body with your blood and make love to you on the full moon. Like that might not happen, right? But if they're going to like bring you tea and rub your back when it's sore, and you know, that could be the way of creating that connection and that blood time, you know, like sometimes you just need to go with where people are comfortable.
And allow things to take time. I also think it's this tough balance too, because if it is like a true deep desire of yours that your partner paints his body with your blood and makes love to you on the full moon, like, don't let go of that desire either. You might not know how or when that desire may be fulfilled. Maybe it will shift into something else, but like I'm a big fan of like really treating your desires as sacred and trusting them, and even if you don't know how it's going to come.
And maybe just holding that intention, you know, that it might not happen today.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen in a few months' time, you know?
But that letting things unfold in their own time, I think, is so important. And that is one of the things that I find my cycle often teaches me. Is there's things are always moving and changing through their seasons. But they are moving.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily at the pace that I think. Before we were recording, we did this little meditation of listening in our body to see if there was a particular part of our body that had wisdom for this conversation. And my cervix was saying just that medicine of just really taking time and letting things warm up at their own pace, in their own way, and unfold in their own fashion. So there's no need to like go straight to full-on body paint unless you want to, but that it can be just something as simple as going, oh, I think I'm going to think about this a little bit differently. Or maybe you are ready to do blood prayers and involve other people in it, just following what's the next right thing for you. Because I often get caught up in this feeling of, you know, I want it all to happen yesterday.
Yeah.
But that's not, I was telling my friend the other day, I feel like I was designed for like the slowness and the pace of life of maybe the Paleolithic period. So it's one of my constant struggles in, you know, 2021 is I'm slow.
Yeah.
I come around to things slowly. This is not like, you know, doesn't mean that everything has to be like that, but really trusting that slowness is okay, gentleness is okay, bit by bit is okay. And sometimes when you let things be slow or gradual, they can unfold in a deeper or maybe more potent way than you realize too.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I think that's I was thinking about what my body told me during that little meditation that we did, and my womb was like having like a squeezy sort of contraction. I'm about to ovulate, so that's, you know, a feeling. And it was just telling me gentleness, gentleness, gentleness over and over again. And, you know, I take that because I tend to kind of be a bit not gentle, maybe a bit fierce and a bit rah. And it's kind of like this reminder to just, you know, I kind of always take that as like, okay, just you drop your guard almost, you know? So it's beautiful. Wisdom of our bodies, like speaking so clearly to us when we listen.
Yeah, I actually just noticed, just as you said that, my lower belly relaxed a little bit. I often notice that it kind of habitually holds in, and then I go, oh yeah, okay, that feels better. let my belly be rounder. Let it take up some space.
Yeah. And just listening to what our body says, you know, like, it's just have to be quiet long enough to hear what it has to say.
And how about, I'm not even sure what entry point I want to take into this, but I do want to talk somehow about the relationship between sexuality and either the bleeding phase or the cycle in general. I noticed particularly when I had my IUD removed and my hormones were kind of doing their thing uninterrupted, really significant differences in the type of sexual connection or experiences that I want throughout the cycle. And it's different, people have different experiences around it with what their patterns are and what they feel, but that was when I actually noticed sometimes, and it's not the same for me every cycle either.
Yeah.
It's interesting to pay attention to how it changes over time and what the circumstances are in my life, and you know, whether the way that I'm taking care of my body or my stress levels or how I spent my bleeding time, how all of those things affect how I feel later on in the cycle.
Yeah.
But I definitely noticed the intensity. It was like I would actually be horny at ovulation time. And I was like, I've never felt this intensity of desire before.
So my partner knows. It's a biological thing, you know?
Yeah. My partner knows, like, he can kind of judge sometimes where I'll come up to him and, like, hug him in a certain way. And he's like, you're ovulating right now, aren't you? And I was like, I just feel this way about you. What do you mean?
This is how I feel about you every day. that's our blueprint, isn't it? When we're in that ovulatory phase, that's the peak of our cycle, you know, and that's almost like when, I mean, obviously, like, not everyone wants to have babies, but biologically speaking, our body is like, fertilize an egg, here we go, you know, like, that's what your, you know, biological body is sort of is doing at that time. I mean, our ovulation is releasing the egg, and the rest of our body is responding to that. So, you know, you might notice that when you're in that ovulation space, you know, you're a bit more concerned about what you're wearing or how you're looking, how you're feeling. It's like that, your energy is up, you're, you know, like, people go, oh gosh, you're glowing today. It's like, I'm ovulating, thanks. Yeah. And then likewise, you know, that shifts as we move into the bleeding part of the cycle, like, it, because it is that internalness that we, it's not, maybe not so much there, but there is still that, you know, the libido is still there in bleeding, but it's different.
The flavor, it can be different.
You know, it's like, it's not so much like, hi, you're like, here I am, come on, come and get me. It's like, I'm getting you now, actually. It's like, this is a totally different energy, you know. It's and notice it in yourself, you know, like, this is the awesome thing about tracking your cycle, is like, tracking, it's not just like, how much did you bleed and did you have pain and did you sleep, and, you know, track that stuff as well, like, what was your libido at the time, or when were you attracted to your partner or to someone else, or, you know, like, what's actually happening on that level, and really tracking it. And then you can just, it's all about just knowing yourself a bit more.
Yeah, definitely really good information that comes from paying attention to the way things fluctuate over that cycle. I also think that the way that embracing your cycle, embracing your blood, the way that that relates to your relationship with your body, just having a more accepting, just being at home in your body.
Yeah.
I think that has huge ramifications for the way that you experience your sexuality too. Yeah. Like, if you, the way you feel about your body and its natural, you know, its fluids, its natural smells and
hair,
yes.
Lots of hair. All those things.
Yeah. The more that you can be at home with those things and celebrate them and honor them how they are, that, in my experience, and both for myself and with friends and clients, is that has it opens you up to so much more joy and pleasure sexually too.
Yeah, that comfort in your body, you know, like knowing you, like really knowing yourself, you know, like what does your vulva look like?
Yes.
Do you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, or, and how old are you when you found out what it looked like? Like for real looks like, you know, not the, you know, cultural images that we see, like, and not just other, your own. Do you know what your own vulva looks like? You know, have you looked?
Yeah.
You know, have you really felt it? You know, and I think this whole thing around being comfortable with our blood and cultivating that takes us to that place.
Yes.
You know, because you have to be touching yourself. You have to be kind of feeling your body internally, externally, you know. And it's amazing. It's amazing to me, like, how many people, you know, don't know what a normal woman's body looks like. Mm. They think that it's the images that we see in pornography is what a woman's body. And I'm like, I don't know any women who look like that. And I've seen a lot of women, you know, like, and they all look different and they're all so beautiful, you know, and they don't look like a whatever pictures those are, you know. Yeah.
There are different different galleries online that, if you're curious, this may be, if you're like not ready to look at your own, maybe this is a different step for you, or maybe you're also interested. There are different galleries online where you can see photos of other women's vulvas and see the natural variation and all of the different shapes and sizes and colors and textures and hair and that sort of thing.
And there's been, I think there's even been some really cool like art exhibitions and I think vulva casts, you know, and stuff like that. It's awesome. Just normalizing what we look like and what a woman's body is, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah. Or come to my house and be admire the vulva art on the walls. Sometimes I forget. I'm like, it's normal to have vulva magnets on your fridge. And then someone new comes over and they're like, you have a lot of vulvas around.
That is the perfect opening to the next conversation. When they open the fridge, then they're like, and there's your blood.
that there is something about just like, you said something too about, I think paying attention to your body signals, paying attention to the sensations that you experience in different times of your cycle.
Mm.
Being connected to the sensations in your body is also something that can help you to tap into more pleasure. Like, where does it feel good? And can you follow that thread?
Mm.
And it just continue to follow that river. And that sensitivity to like, this feels good and this doesn't, and to be able to name what you like and what you need and that sort of thing also.
And being able to say that, you know, to yourself or to someone else, you know, a lot of that, if there is an inability to do that, you know, that's just going to be tied to those old shame stories, you know, like I can't say what feels good, or I've been silenced for whatever reason, or I feel shame to say that, you know, and whatever that's tied to. So this kind of, you know, unraveling these stories and these imprints that we carry is going to impact everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's huge. It's huge, you know, life changing, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Definitely has changed my life.
Mm. Mm, definitely.
So what else, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you think someone with a cycle stands to gain by occupying, reclaiming their cycle as sacred?
Well, I've had this question actually, like I run an online red tent and I've had a question pop up where people who maybe don't identify as a woman wanting to know if they can be in the red tent space or having questions or like whatever. And you know, this kind of work of this deep sort of menstrual work is really for everyone who menstruates, you know, like it doesn't, you know, I say the word woman because that's what, you know, who I am, but you know, there's lots of people who have different names for themselves or identify differently, but like they're still bleeding.
Yeah.
You know, they're still having this like blood cycle, and the imprint is going to be whatever their imprint was, you know? So it just really feels really important that, I guess, to just say that this work, this kind of like doing blood prayers or, you know, connecting in with your body, whatever your body looks like, you know, or really kind of, honoring your time and space when you bleed is like it's for all of us who have a cycle. You know, like it's so important. It's so important because just imagine if everyone's giving their blood back to the earth, what that can do. If everyone's letting go of their shame, if everyone's letting go of their silence or whatever, what is that going to transform? Yeah. You know, like that's so powerful to think about. And when you think about how many people are bleeding on the earth at any given time, you know, it's massive. Like it's, you know, billions of people are having this experience. And if everyone was doing a blood prayer, for example, and everyone was saying, I'm letting go of something and doing this exchange with the earth, this magical exchange, like I just think how much would that shift in our bigger picture of the world if everyone was honoring their cycle, you know? And even if that honoring just looked like naming it, I'm bleeding and I'm resting.
Yeah.
No, like I just think the ripple effect of what that could be would just be so huge and amazing. Yeah. Just thinking about how awesome that would be.
Yeah.
If everyone who's bleeding did a blood prayer.
Yeah.
No? Yeah. Every single person. That would be incredible.
And even if what that symbolizes, if everyone knew how to listen to and honor their body.
Yeah.
Whatever their body is telling them or whatever experience their body is offering up.
Yeah. It would be incredible. I just think, like, think of the cultural change that would come if, if everyone honored their body.
Yeah.
And everyone listened to their body and went, like, it would be so beautiful.
Well, you'd be seeing some of that already through the work that you do.
Yeah,
you'd
absolutely.
Have a taste of it.
Yeah, and I think that the biggest thing that I feel is so impactful is on the young girls, like the ones who haven't started bleeding yet, the ones who are coming up to bleeding. You know, it's like if they can have that experience, if they can have their first blood imprint being one of being fully empowered, you know, fully in their bodies, no shame, understanding what comes of being within your body, like, you know, what we've talked about, the pleasure and the, you know, the knowledge that you have. If they, these girls who are like 9, 10, 11, 12, however old they are, start with that, like, what is that going to grow into? That's going to grow into like an absolutely amazing, you know, woman who, you know, is going to be unstoppable, really. So I see that so much in my daughter and her friends, and I just think, okay, like, you're the future of this, you know? This is so important.
Yeah. I just feel like this kind of thrill of excitement up through my shoulders, kind of, when you say that, you know, through my arms, my chest.
Yeah. It's good shivers. Shivers for the future.
Shivers, I think shivers for the future. I think that's a good place to start wrapping up. So tell us about where people can find you, what kind of offers you have, anything like that.
Yeah, well, so I inhabit a few places in social media land, but you can find my website, thewildwitch.com.au, and basically all of my social handles are The Wildest Witch, because, you know, there's a lot of wild witches out there, but I'd be the wildest. And I do my own offerings in the world around this blood work. So I've got a course coming up soon called Sacred Blood, which is all about really tapping into the magical aspects of this and how we can connect in with the visioning capacity around our blood and what that can give us and where that can take us in the world. And hopefully that'll be live soon. We'll see how we go over Christmas. And yeah, so I live in Northern New South Wales, and I do a lot of circles and workshops locally for women around blood stuff and around honoring like seasonal things and different circles and different things that we can do. And I also teach with the School of Shamanic Womancraft. So teach an awesome course called The Four Seasons Journey, which is an in-person, awesome year-long course for women to really, really know their wild woman out in nature, which is awesome. And we'll be launching an online course soon called Earth Woman, which focuses on a lot of the same stuff, but will be an online offering for those who live in faraway places or can't come to something in real life. So there's a few different places.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Yeah, and if you sign up to my mailing list on my website, there's a free blood ritual that comes to you, like a ritual of honoring, which is just my little gift for everyone.
About.
Yeah, just one of the ways, one of the many, many ways that you can do that.
Yes. I love coming to your Sabbath. Do you say, is that how you say
it?
Sabbath circles?
Yeah.
If you live in the accessible to the Northern Rivers area, I definitely would love to see you there.
They've been very beautiful.
Yeah. My last question, if there's one thing, if there's one thing that you would like people to take away from this conversation, what would it be?
Oh. Jeez.
I think it would have to be to just to give your blood back to the earth. It's so important, and it, you might think it's not, but it actually is, and it will start doing the change, even if you don't even know what to say. Even if you just think, I don't know what to say, and you just do it, like, it will start to shift things, because it just is. And ultimately, even if you can't catch your blood and put it out on the ground somewhere, you know, it's going out to the earth anyway. So just think about that, you know, even if it's just, something going to landfill, like, that's still going to the earth in its own way. So you know, just think about that connection. And if you can, to just do those blood prayers, and it's pure magic.
And I think for me, it's an encouragement to start wherever, I mean, whether you totally get all of this and this is your life, or whether this is something new to you, to find the place where you can touch the shame or touch the disgust and find a small doable way to start there, but allow yourself the grace of many years for the process to keep unfolding, and trust that your body has its own timing of what it has capacity for, but that we were all meant to live in kind of communion with our wholeness in this way.
Yeah, so beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your time and your wisdom and your blood stories.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here and having such a beautiful chat.
How about Jasper? Do you have anything to say? He heard his name.
I am so glad that you're here, listening to Reawakening Love and Power with Carol Ann. I hope that it is supporting you to reawaken love and power in your own life. Links to Sequoia's website and social media profiles are in the episode description. I support women one-on-one to feel at home in their bodies and their sensual sexual nature, both within themselves and in relationship. Some of the themes people bring to me include shifting recurring relationship patterns, tendencies towards anxiety, and working with the impact of harmful religious conditioning. If you're curious about working with me, I'd love to meet you and have a conversation. You can book a free no-pressure clarity call through my website, carolann.com.au. May this episode be a gentle invitation into the wonders of your blood and a gentle melting of shame.